Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. Though you may not realize that the ongoing threat of terrorism is affecting your life and that of your loved ones. Each week, Dr. Carol analyzes the hottest topics in terror and helps you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror.
Ghosts of surrender to Taliban taunt us today. Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol Lieberman, your terrorist therapist. Well, yes, it was 2 years ago this week that Biden made the historic mistake, debacle, mistake doesn't do it justice, of pulling us out of Afghanistan in such a chaotic and ill-advised way that we are more at risk today in 2023 of a 9/11 and other terror attacks than we were 2 years ago or even at the original 9/11. Let me just first orient you in terms of the dates. August 15th, 2021, the Taliban seized power. August 26th, 2021, the suicide bomber attacked at Kabul airport and killed 13 American troops. And then August 30th, 2021, that is when the withdrawal of troops is said to be completed. Now, of course, at the time, Biden promised that no American would be left behind. And in fact, there are hundreds, at least 200. We don't really know the exact number, but it is likely hundreds. We don't know because they have done very little to try to track and rescue the Americans. They have tracked and rescued Afghans who are now in our country, 80,000 of them approximately. Since the vetting was so bad in Afghanistan, we don't know which of those 80,000 Afghans that we flew over in lieu of Americans are actually terrorists. Some of them did help our troops, but we surely, with the chaos that was going on in Afghanistan at the time, surely people, Afghans who, you know, were terrorists, are terrorists, are currently in America. So now, we still don't know why exactly President Biden did this debacle, especially when he was warned by top generals not to do it that way. We know what he says is the reason why he did it. And of course, he blames it on Trump, because Trump had made an agreement with the Taliban to consider withdrawing troops because he didn't want more American lives to be spent than 20 years in Afghanistan after 9/11. But surely Trump would have stopped the pullout when he saw on August 15th, 2021, that the Taliban was seizing power, probably even before that, when he could see that they were beginning to seize power before they actually had seized it. So you can't blame it on Trump. He also, I'll be mentioning some other things today that he blamed things on, but he blamed it on everybody and everything except himself. And so, what do I think is the reason? We still don't know, and I'm going to tell you about that because we still don't know a lot of details. But what I think are the two main reasons that this was such a debacle. I think if we want to say that it was not on purpose, not deliberate, then the reason would be Biden's dementia. I warned people in 2020 when he was in his basement. 2016 when he was in his basement running for president, that he had what I called encroaching dementia. We have all seen, I mean, I said that based upon my experience and knowledge as a forensic psychiatrist who has had to evaluate people for their competency, you know, their mental status, their ability to sign wills or sign other papers, things like that. How competent are they? So I recognize the signs. I mean, really, most psychiatrists certainly are taught how to recognize the signs. But, you know, as a forensic psychiatrist, I've had a lot of experience under stressful circumstances, you know, under court cases where the decision as to whether somebody was competent or not when they signed a will or a contract or whatever has huge repercussions. So that's the one thing, you know, that that his dementia that had further encroached, and we see it, of course, today even more with his memory problems and his confabulation and his irritable behavior and 100 other symptoms. One of the main things that I, in terms of the surrender from Afghanistan, one of the main things that I think was hindering him, if it wasn't on purpose, was his lack of analytic or abstract ability. That is one of the higher mental functions that we all have. Some of us have better abstract ability than others. And certainly in terms of dementia, that's one of the main things to go. So what that means is abstract thinking, it has to do with, it's something that players, chess players, have a lot of, are very endowed with this ability to abstract think and analyze situations. It's the ability to hold different strategies in your mind at the same time and choose which one to do first and what would happen if you did that or if you did this. I mean, you can think about it. Chess players have to figure out, you know, what would happen if they make this move, and then the other person might make this move or they might make that move. And you have to be able to go all the way down the line. Well, you know, war is chess in a sense. And clearly Biden was not able to move his chess pieces when his plan A wasn't working, you know, when the Taliban seized power and were gradually making it more dangerous, chaotic, and so on, rushing the game, Biden did not have a plan B. But then we come down to the question, well, okay, but then why didn't he listen to his top generals who were telling him plan B, or even actually telling him plan A, and he didn't listen to them. Now, so if it wasn't, so that would explain, you know, if it wasn't on purpose. But if it was on purpose, why would that be? Why would he purposely mess it up, which has so many repercussions, not least of which is the fact that it showed to the families of people who had gone over there to fight and to people contemplating joining the military and to, you know, people who died or got injured over in Afghanistan, all of the people, all of the troops who ran after 9/11, they ran to enlist because they wanted to protect America. They felt so patriotic that they wanted to protect America. So they ran to enlist. And yes, then it went 20 years, but it was still the patriotism that was causing people to enlist. So when Biden had this debacle of a pullout, it made people think, not just the families of the victim, of the veterans or the veterans themselves, but it made everyone think, well, how sad that they gave their life or gave their limb. You know, what did they do it for? In the end, what was gained? Now, really what was gained was, I think it did keep another 9/11 from happening for 20 years. But it certainly has discouraged, you know, looking at today, it certainly has discouraged people from joining the military, you know, because what people are thinking to themselves, well, why should I go over there and risk my life when a president, Biden or some other president, could just decide willy-nilly that he wants to pull out and all of my efforts would be in vain. Well, I think so. If it was purposeful, if he purposely ignored the advice of his top generals and so on, and if it wasn't just his dementia, then I think that it's because of Obama. Obama made our country more vulnerable to terrorists than any other president. And undoubtedly, he did a number of things while he was president that really put us in greater danger. And we know it's really not a secret that Obama is ruling the White House, that Biden is just a puppet. And as a psychiatrist, you know, I have to look at what happened in Biden, in Obama's childhood. Well, Obama studied at madrasas. And what do they teach at madrasas? They teach jihad. So why would, in addition to like his relatives and his heritage, his own ancestors and so on, why would he not? Why would that not be a central idea to his thinking? Why would he not agree with the terrorists or the Taliban, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, in their plan to take over the world and enact Sharia law? I mean, that is, you know, this is something that Americans in particular are in denial about, are complacent about, thinking about how, you know, they think, most people here think that 9/11 or terror attacks in general won't happen again. And because I don't know why they think that, but I mean, you know, it was such a shock and so on. And of course, now there are so many people in America, you know, the younger generations who weren't alive during 9/11. So it's hard to remember, or well, you can't remember, but it's hard to realize the trauma of that day if you weren't there. I mean, of course, as I've talked about in previous podcasts, it has gotten passed down the trauma of it through parents and so on, but not the fear, not the feeling, not the concern that this was not a one and done. This is something that terrorists, all forms and shapes of terrorists, you know, all types of terrorists have planned. As I said, for over 1,000 years, and they are not stopping now. It may seem like they, you know, because there haven't been any attacks, or I won't say any attacks. Actually, there have been attacks, but they have been foiled, fortunately. And so we don't hear about them, especially in the mainstream media. But I mean, we've had things like Salman Rushdie was knifed, but of course, that's just one man, but it's not like 9/11. But there are the large reason why we haven't had attacks during these past 2 or 3 years is because of COVID and the lockdowns, and the people weren't going out. Even today, people aren't going as much as they used to, because there is still some fear in terms of COVID. And of course, now that COVID's maybe coming back, or that also seems a bit overblown, but in any case, so people weren't at concerts or weren't at big entertainment events, places where terrorists could set off a suicide bomb and kill a lot of people. Well, all right, so let me just tell you that I was mentioning the top generals. So the top generals, this is a quote, a headline, top US generals say they advised against complete pullout from Afghanistan. And the main person who was talking about this was General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and General Kenneth McKenzie, chairman, sorry, commander of US Central Command. And they said that they personally had recommended that some 2,500 troops remain on the ground in Afghanistan. But Biden ordered a complete pullout of US forces by, he had said at one point, August 31st, and then they pulled out by August 30th. So he was ahead of the time, ahead of the game. They pulled out in a tremendous rush because the Taliban was creating more and more violence, and it was more and more dangerous. They try to say, the White House has tried to say that Biden received split advice about what to do in Afghanistan, which, you know. So when Milley, General Mark Milley, was asked whether the pullout and disorderly evacuation, during which 13 American troops were killed in a bomb attack, had damaged U.S. credibility. And he sort of tried to go around and around about this. He said, I think that our credibility with allies and partners around the world and with adversaries is being intensely reviewed by them to see which way this is going to go. And I think damage is one word that could be used. Yes. So he admits that. He said the Taliban was and remains a terrorist organization, and they still have not broken ties with Al-Qaeda, which plotted 9/11 attacks from Afghanistan. So we are in more and more danger. You know, we're coming up on the anniversary of 9/11. And as I said last year and the year before, and probably the year before that, we are in more danger today than we were when 9/11 actually happened. Milley said, or no, Austin said, one second. Let's see. Oh, the defense secretary, yeah. Austin said that the United States, quote, did not fully comprehend the depth of corruption and poor leadership in the Afghan armed forces. We helped build a state, but we could not forge a nation. The fact that the Afghan army we and our partners trained simply melted away, in many cases without firing a shot, took us all by surprise. Well, you know, blame Trump, blame the Afghan, you know, the Afghan military that they had trained. I mean, it was shocking. It did catch them by surprise. That was Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin who said that. Yes, it was a surprise that they crumbled so quickly, you know, when it came time to fight the Taliban. And, you know, they didn't have their heart in it. They had all American equipment and they were trained on it. But apparently they didn't have their heart in it because... perhaps some of them felt more loyal to the Taliban. Perhaps some of them were afraid of the Taliban. But yes, they did crumble. But that, so you make plans for that. You can't just assume that they're going to take the place of American soldiers. I mean, that was a ridiculous assumption. All right. Well, we can stop here for this segment. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you more about how the ghosts of surrender to the Taliban haunt us today. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, where we're talking today about ghosts of surrender to Taliban haunt us today. So now let me tell you about what is happening currently. Well, it's been, the needless to say, the parents of the 13 U.S. troops who were killed as America was scrambling to get out of Afghanistan because of the mess that Biden had made. A suicide bomber was able to get through and unleash his bomb and wind up killing 13 American troops. And it was very sad. And so the parents of these 13, and then of course, as you may have seen, did you see when these troops came back in coffins They were unloaded from a plane in Washington, D.C., and Biden was there. And it was just, you know, it was, he made the whole situation worse, if you could, if it could be even worse, you know, for a parent losing their child. But as he was giving a rambling speech, he was looking at his watch. Do you remember that? That did get in the media a lot, where, and he came up with some excuse later, but, you know, it was like, can we get this over with already? I have to go get some ice cream, was really what it was. And needless to say, you know, this was a travesty. There was no reason why we couldn't have pulled out in a way to save all the American troops who were still alive at that point in Afghanistan. Anyhow, so the parents have been meeting with some people in Congress who are trying to get to the bottom of this. I mean, of course, what? It's 2 years later. I don't know. These things, everything takes forever, right? It should not. There should be complete transparency. Anyhow, one of the parents of one of the troops, one of the 13, named Mark Schmitz, he is one of the parents who has been particularly, you know, forging ahead and trying to get answers. So he was asked on a recent broadcast, his name is Mark Schmitz, and his son is Lance Corporal Jared Schmitz. And Jared was killed in the Kabul airport attack. And he hasn't gotten answers. The parent hasn't gotten answers on whether the Kabul suicide bomber could have been taken out before the attack, and accused the Biden administration of covering up evidence. Well, I mean, yeah, you know, if he couldn't have been gotten out before the suicide bomber attack, then they would tell him that. They would have told him that 2 years ago. The fact that they're covering it up and being quiet about it tells the whole story. They could, you know, it says that it could have been, if they had done it in a better way, that they could have taken the suicide bomber out. They could have actually stopped it even before it got to that point where a suicide bomber was allowed to get that close. Anyhow, he was asked by the host whether he ever got any answers about this. And he said, quote, "Nothing yet. In fact, I've asked for copies of the SD card footage off of his rifle scope," the suicide attacker, suicide bomber's scope. And let's see. That would have been recorded, and they would have been able to have that as evidence that this was or was not, in fact, the bomber. That card has been misplaced, as they say. So I don't know what the truth is anymore. We can't seem to get a straight answer out of anybody. Yes. That and the fact that these parents are, you know, are not being given the respect of getting answers is just making the whole tragedy even worse. Okay, let's see. Now, Kevin McCarthy, I remember I mentioned that the suicide bomb attack was on August 26, 2021. And so just recently, he asked the U.S., he ordered that the U.S. Capitol flag be lowered to half mast to honor the 13 troops who were killed on that day. He said, 2 years ago today, we tragically lost 13 brave servicemen and women in Afghanistan. I have directed the flags of the U.S. Capitol to be lowered to half staff in honor of these American heroes. And let me just, to honor them, read their names. And notice their ages. They were all so young. Their lives should not have been cut short at this time. Sergeant Johanny Rosario Picardo. Sergeant Nicole L.G. Staff Sergeant Darren T. Hoover. Corporal Hunter Lopez. Corporal Dagan W. Page, Corporal Humberto A. Sanchez, Lance Corporal David L. Espinoza. Oh, yes, I said I was going to mention their ages, and then I didn't. Anyhow, Pichardo was 25, G was 23, Hoover was 31, Lopez was 22, Page was 23. Corporal Humberto A. Sanchez was 22. Lance Corporal David L. Espinoza was 20. Lance Corporal Jared M. Schmitz was 20. So this man's son was 20. Lance Corporal Riley J. McCullum was 20. Lance Corporal Dylan R. Marola was 20. Lance Corporal Kareem M. Nakui was 20. Navy Corpsman Maxton W. Soviak was 22. And Staff Sergeant Ryan C. Knaus was 23. So is that a tragedy or what? A suicide bomber slipped past the Taliban checkpoints to the gates where they were screening entrance. And that was where he detonated his bomb. And of course, people had been killed, for over the 20 years as well. But it just seems, it just seemed like if we were going to get out of Afghanistan to save people, then they certainly should have been able to save these 13 on the last day or near the last day. Biden still hasn't taken responsibility for any of this. He hasn't taken responsibility for having, the horrible way that it was done, the haphazard way, or if not on purpose, that it was done. He denies making any mistakes with the withdrawal. He said he was right. He said, quote, Biden said, quote, no, all the evidence is coming back. Do you remember what I said about Afghanistan? I said Al-Qaeda would not be there. I said it wouldn't be there. I said we'd get help from the Taliban. What's happening now? What's going on? Read your press. I was right. Oh, God, how could he say this? One father, let's see, one of the other fathers of the of these 13 troops said he called on Biden and his top aides to resign. He said, quote, I'm calling out Secretary Blinken, Secretary Austin, General Milley, General McKenzie, Lieutenant Colonel Whitehead, who could not give the order to the snipers to take out the bomber before he detonated his vest, and ultimately the president. Do what our son did, be a grown man. He's talking to the president now. Do what our son did, be a grown-ass man, admit your mistakes, learn from them, so that this doesn't happen ever, ever again. You all need to resign immediately. Our sons and daughters have more integrity in their little toes than every one of them combined. Every one of the people he said should be fired. And that is absolutely true. Now, to make things worse, as if this pullout surrender wasn't bad enough. And let me tell you, this is going to be, when people study history in school, of course, the history that kids are studying these days in America is so distorted that it's not going to give a true view anyway. But when they study history, they are going to realize that this surrender, this date in history, will be seen, when we get a little further down the road in history, it will be seen as the end. Well, I don't want to be so bleak, but I won't say the end of America. Well, certainly the end of America's position in the world. Not to say that we can't reclaim it, and I certainly hope that we do. But not only did this, have such a negative effect on potential people who would enlist in the military, but it has had such an effect on our enemies, because it was after this pullout that Russia invaded Ukraine, that China started acting up, that Iran took more power, North Korea, of course. All our enemies thought to themselves, I mean, it was such a debacle. They thought to themselves, oh, he's surrendering to the Taliban. If we can get America to surrender, if they can get whoever, if the Taliban can get America to surrender to them, then hell, we're stronger than the Taliban. We can take over America too. Meanwhile, to make things worse, the Biden administration has given $2.35 billion to the Taliban since the withdrawal. It's not enough that we surrendered. We have to give them billions of dollars. And, you know, nobody in America has voted. Well, I mean, I guess indirectly we vote. Well, supposedly we voted for Biden. I mean, he isn't going down to the local supermarket and saying, do you agree that I should give this money to the Taliban, you know, a terrorist organization? And in Afghanistan, it was this way all along, and it's still this way now. Not only is there the Taliban, but there's Al-Qaeda, there's ISIS, and they're all in this country and in other countries too, but all together, this is sort of where they are together, you know, where they're concentrated. And of course, they're still planning to take over America. So, and then, let's see. And that the Taliban has been getting this money is because we give the money, Biden gives the money to non-governmental organizations. In other words, the organizations who are there to help the people of Afghanistan, not the Taliban, you know, to give the poor starving people in Afghanistan food and money for food and things like that. The problem is that the Taliban rules the roost, and they take a large part of the money that America gives to Afghanistan. The Taliban rules everything. So of course they're able to take the money from these, you know, non-governmental agencies. There are all these groups working on reconstruction projects and so on, but the Taliban is in control of them. And in fact, the head of this organization, a head of an organization that is supposed to be watching out. Let me see here. The organization is called SIGAR, SIGAR. And the head of it is John Sopko, and he told the House Foreign Relations, Foreign Affairs Committee that he, quote, cannot assure the committee or the American taxpayer we are not currently funding the Taliban. So he admits that. This keeps going on. And so not only have we left them arms and left them all kinds of machinery and weapons of all different kinds, we just left it there. That was another thing, another brilliant move. We, instead of taking out our weapons and leaving behind some troops and enough weapons for those troops, American troops, and other, you know, nations who were helping with this, instead of leaving, they left the weapons themselves. I mean, that makes absolutely no sense. Again, so that's why you have to kind of wonder whether this was on purpose. Because if it was just his dementia, then someone would have said to him, you know, or gotten him to listen to them. But no, there was someone more powerful behind him, namely Obama. Also, Biden is also aiding Al-Qaeda, you know, the people who brought us 9/11. Yes, he is giving money, manpower, and territory. Biden claimed, this is just recently, he falsely claimed that Al Qaeda was no longer operating in Afghanistan. Like, how do you have a president who doesn't know, well, or does know, but is lying to us, that Al Qaeda is still operating in Afghanistan? That's really not brain surgery. There are people studying this all the time. I study it. I look at the reports about what Al Qaeda is doing. And they've been trying to re during the lockdowns, for example, they use that as time to recruit more people to join their organization. And it's on the internet. I'm sure people could show it to Biden, bring it up on the internet and show all the recruiting and so on, and show where Al Qaeda is. I mean, Al Qaeda and ISIS are actually in a number of places. There's a lot of attacks going on in the world. You may not hear about them, but in Africa and in Pakistan, all over. So they by no means have gone to sleep. So Biden, he said, quote, "I said Al Qaeda would not be there. I said it wouldn't be there. I said we'd get help from the Taliban. What's happening now? What's going on? Read your press." So Al Qaeda actually does have training camps in six provinces in Afghanistan, and including in a place called Helmand, where hundreds of Marines had been killed and wounded trying to secure this province. And now it's overrun by Al Qaeda. And there were 378 Marines killed and 5,000 wounded just in this one place. And also, Al Qaeda has safe houses across Afghanistan, including in Kabul. And let me, I think I should probably, well, let me go on a little bit longer with this. The Taliban have appointed Al Qaeda leaders to key positions, including as governors of entire provinces, which, yes, does seems to fly in the face of logic, except for the fact that there is sometimes they are fighting each other and sometimes they conspire with each other. I mean, America is there for all three of these terrorist organizations, Taliban, Al Qaeda, and ISIS. America is their number one enemy. So to that extent, they can work together, to plot things against America. Well, I think I'll stop right here, but then when we come back, we'll go into this a little bit more, and then I will tell you some other things about some other outrageous things that are happening, including why Taliban fighters, unsettled by peace, seek new battles abroad. Dun dun dun. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show. Today we're talking about ghosts of surrender to Taliban taunt us today. So I'm going to be telling you more about that. This whole, I was telling you about how Biden is helping Al Qaeda. A UN Security Council report documented that Al Qaeda members have received appointments and advisory roles in the Taliban security and administrative structures. It is the Islamic terror group is rebuilding its operational capacity. Now, the Taliban denied this. I mean, it seems pretty outrageous that the Taliban is depending upon Al Qaeda for help, although it is Al Qaeda who perpetrated 9/11. So they are a little more sophisticated than the Taliban. Let's see. So Biden took $3.5 billion, as I was saying, billion with a B, meant for 9/11 victims. He got this money from the money that was meant for 9/11 victims, and he diverted it to a trust fund, whatever that means, for Afghanistan. Oh, by the way, SIGAR, S-I-G-A-R, it stands for Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction. So meanwhile, while all this has been happening, Biden has been freeing Guantanamo Bay terrorists, who dangerous terrorists, and there's a whole, I'm going to be telling you about that too. There's a whole new outrageous thing going on with Guantanamo and what's happening there, but I'll save that for the next podcast. So Biden is being considered the best thing to happen to Al-Qaeda, even more than, I mean, this particular article, they said even more than Obama, but the thing is Biden is Obama's puppet, so Obama is continuing through Biden. Now, even while Al-Qaeda and the Taliban remain tightly integrated, or so it is thought, Biden is claiming that the Taliban are helping America against Al-Qaeda, So he's ignoring these reports that there is some integration. So Biden is claiming that the Taliban are helping America against Al-Qaeda, even while he claims that Al-Qaeda isn't in Afghanistan. Do you get that? I mean, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. Some of it is his dementia, but some of it is just are just lies. So, you know, when Biden surrendered to the Taliban, it wasn't just surrendering to the Taliban, it was surrendering to Al-Qaeda as well, which is particularly significant on this eve of the next anniversary of 9/11. Another weird connect sense of, you know, it's kind of like the enemy of my enemy is my friend way of thinking. The U.S. and the Taliban joined forces to battle ISIS in Afghanistan. So now the U.S. and the Taliban are fighting ISIS, supposedly. And the Taliban and Al-Qaeda are joining. I mean, you kind of, this is like, who's on first? Anyhow, but this part actually is unfortunately true, that the U.S. is looking towards the Taliban government as an ally against ISIS. It is beyond. So now there's the Islamic State Khorasan, which is ISIS-K, and that's ISIS that's in Afghanistan. And they are not good guys, but to trust to the Taliban to be our ally against ISIS-K, you can't trust any of these terrorists. Like, hello, we should have learned this a long time ago. They are all out for the same thing, to take over the world, basically, and to make the whole world radical Islamist. Now, there was a leaked Pentagon assessment that said that Islamic State terrorists are once again using Afghanistan as a staging ground for plots against America, Europe, and Asia. So, you know, these inconvenient truths are true. I mean, basically, Afghanistan is a staging ground for all three of these terrorist groups. And now here's what I was promising you. Taliban fighters, and this is a very interesting what? Oh, psychologically, it's very interesting to think about them. I mean, it makes sense. This is what I was talking about. The Taliban fighters, unsettled by peace, seek new battles abroad. So it's been 2 years since we surrendered, and there have been young Talibans or young Talibs, as they call them, who are bored. They went to they studied in madrasas to wage jihad. They have since they were little boys and girls. Well, I guess mostly boys, but yeah, you can't do anything as a girl. So, anyhow, they studied in a madrasa, in madrasas, and in Afghanistan, in particular, these ones that I'm talking about. And they were taught about this romantic notion of waging jihad all over the world. So this one particular, as an example, this one young man, Mohammed Khalid Tahir, he dreamed of waging jihad, throughout these years in school. And by the time he was a teenager, he had joined the Taliban, and he celebrated when they seized power from America 2 years ago. But then the high from that victory didn't last long. He was reassigned as a soldier in the capital, and he now frequently complained that he's bored and he wants to return to his life's purpose, which is to wage jihad. So this spring he did. He went across the border in Pakistan. Illegally, he crossed the border to Pakistan. And he said, "Our only quote, our only expectation is to be martyred." So basically, he went there to die, in the name of Allah, as a good radical Islamist boy or young man does. He was killed a month after he arrived in Pakistan by Pakistani security forces. So there are hundreds of young Taliban soldiers who have crossed illegally into Pakistan to battle alongside an insurgent group. And basically, more than hundreds who were raised in these madrasas to wage jihad, and now now they're in Afghanistan, and the Taliban is ruling it, and it is relatively peaceful in terms of, I mean, it's not great for the Afghan people who are starving and all that, but there is no drive immediately, although they're working up to this. There's no current, there's no place for these young Talibans to go to wage jihad unless they cross illegally into Pakistan and then go to other countries as well. But he said there are many people, many of them are determined to continue to wage jihad wherever in the world it takes them. This is what they say. They are beginning to destabilize neighboring countries, and then, of course, their ultimate goal is to reach the West. So countries from Russia and China to the United States and Iran have all raised alarms about the possible resurgence in Afghanistan of terrorist groups. Well, in America, you don't hear much about this. I don't know of any people who are alarmed. Certainly Biden isn't alarmed. But they're, inside, probably they're alarmed in Russia and China and Iran and any other country, that has any sense. Or leaders with sense, I should say. Americans have sense, but unfortunately, we have a leader who doesn't. So they're worried about terrorist groups, not like all three terrorist groups, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and the Taliban. The Taliban has publicly condemned this outflow of young fighters, but they don't really seem to be doing much to stop them. Because part of them want, I mean, that's their goal too, to take over the world, bring the world to to radical Islam. Let's see. So there are all kinds of things going on, particularly in regard to Pakistan, where that's where they have started to wage jihad. And many are invigorated by the collapse of the Western-backed government in Afghanistan. So, I mean, that is the thing. Just like I was talking about our enemies in China and Russia and all of that, that they have become emboldened because we surrendered to the Taliban. Same thing for other terrorists, whether they're, in Afghanistan. I mean, whether they're ISIS or Al Qaeda or Taliban, they are emboldened by the fact that they did it once. They could do it again. If they got our surrender once, they can do it again. So these young men who have been taught again in the madrasas that they're the goal, the glory goal, the biggest goal or the best goal that they can aspire to is waging jihad all over the world. So once they've gone through all of this and once they've seen the surrender and that it can be done, they now would rather wage jihad than work on their family's farms. A man named Abdul Bari Wasil Sardor, who's 38, said, quote, "Our village had been known for producing engineers and doctors before the wars. But now, they're producing these jihadists, who want to actively wage jihad, whether it's a suicide attack. Now the young generation are only interested in doing jihad," he said. The like many boys in their village, this other young man, Mr. Malang, quote, "joined the Taliban as teenagers and disappeared into mountainside hideouts from where they staged hit-and-run attacks on Western and Afghan government forces. They celebrated each successful operation against the so-called infidels." So in other words, for 20 years, or well, for 20 years, there's been war in the country. They've been taught to wage jihad. And now, just because America has pulled out, it's hard, if not impossible, to get them to decide to do something else. Just work on the farm. No, that doesn't give them the same excitement. Some of these people said, these young jihadis, or young Afghans said they were determined not to let their dreams of martyrdom pass thereby. They said, quote, "Everywhere that Muslims are in trouble, we must help them, like Palestine and Myanmar, even America." So that's the thing. They're not just thinking about, they've gotten this fight in them, they've gotten this goal in them, drummed into them in school. So now it's not just about doing it nearby, like Pakistan. It's like helping Muslims all over the world, freeing them. Although I don't know what they think is happening to them. Muslims are in trouble, and we must help them. Even America, I don't think that's a fair statement. But in any case, if it goes according to what they want to believe, that is all that counts. So that's another reason why I'm saying that, why the title of this podcast today is about the ghosts haunting us. It's not over. The pullout from Afghanistan is haunting us in so many ways, not least of which is the fact that it has emboldened all these jihadists who have nothing to do except work on the farms. And you can imagine, like, if you, I mean, they become, they're radical Islamists. They become, so taught to be so, I mean, some of these, you know, I've done research into what is taught at some of these madrasas, and it is so, it's done in such a way, starting with the youngest little boys, you know, teaching like 3 and 4 year olds to do drills, to do, to carry a gun. I mean, these toddlers, they teach them all these different weapons and all these reasons why they have to kill non-believers. And so that gets embedded in them. And just because America pulled out, they can't just like forget this is what they grew up on. They can't just forget about it, because that would make, you know, all these, they need a purpose in life. And the purpose is jihad. Well, thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol Lieberman, your terrorist therapist.
You've been listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. Stay tuned and she'll be right back with more analysis of this week's hottest topic in terror.